be a struggle, right? وَالَّذِينَ جَاهَدُوا فِينا. At the end of a struggle, then comes the gift. Now, the other people that used to come in, I used to ask them for 1,000, right? And then the 1,000 was given in charity. But for him to give the 1,000 was a great thing. It would put that strain on him. Imagine now, in today's terms, about 1,000,000. And if you just take or just cough out 1,000,000, and he's taking it and giving it in charity. So won't that be a burden on the person? It will be definitely a burden. So that mujahada, and mujahada means that exerting yourself. Right? So it's an exertion. This exertion is not physical, it is a mental exertion. But an exertion that is very great, must take out 1,000,000. Tomorrow, if you got a message now, you have to pull out 1,000,000, just give this person here. Can you sleep the night? Even a wealthy person won't be able to sleep. I must pull out 1,000,000 and give to this person here. Why must I give him? So all the type of thoughts will run through your mind that I must pull out, I must cough out 1,000,000 and pay this person here. And you will go through some type of a mental strain and exertion you will go through. Right. So in deen as well, Allah Ta'ala has designed it such that you go through a strain. You are desirous of something and you are told that you keep back, you hold back. That person has insulted you. And now you are told that you hold back, you restrain. You mustn't say anything. Right? You saw something and you want to see it. And deen is telling you, no, you must restrain. So doesn't it have an exertion? Doesn't it exert you? It's so near you and you can't see it. It's so tempting. It looks so beautiful. And yet I must hold back. There's nothing that is stopping me. But the deen is telling you that hold back. So it is nothing that is stopping you from seeing what you need to see, but deen. Deen is saying don't see it. If you saw it the first time is permissible. That first time being permissible doesn't mean that you can see it deliberately and say, now I've done something permissible. It's an accidental glance. And a glance means just that one glance. Then you turn your eyes totally away from it. You can't say now that one glance kept on staring because the first one was permissible, so I kept on looking. So that glance, and then straight away you turn. It's like an accident. Then the first glance is being permitted. It means an accidental glance. Accident is an accident. So when it's an accident, then after the accident you get up. Then it's no more an accident. If you look again, it's not an accident. Then it's deliberate. But when you saw the first time, it was an accident. But if you kept on looking, is it an accident? So that glance which is permissible is that accidental first glance, then you turn your sight away. Now in this age, this seems to be a major problem, right? Seems to be a major mujahada. Because sometimes you're traveling on the road, sometimes you're in a mall, sometimes you're in a train, sometimes you're in a plane, and you see the aunties all running around everywhere. Now, what are you going to do? So the better thing is not to be asked to serve. Don't ask them to serve you. The first time they came, said, thank you. You just put your head on, thank you, and went away. But even the mujahada that is even greater is not to even look in that direction. You don't know. In the aisle, someone is going to come. Right? Something is going to come on the aisle, up or down. At the moment, you're going to look, and then you're going to catch sight of it again. So you can't call it a purely accidental glance, because you knew when you're going to be turning in that direction, this is what you're going to see. Right? So I've been thinking about it in this safar, Ladakh put in my mind. Previously, people used to also undertake the safar of Umrah and Hajj, right? And in this safar of Umrah and Hajj, they would require a lot of blessings they would require. Bhargat, and a lot of improvement in their lives. And perhaps one of the contributing factors may have been the difficulties that they had gone through that entire Safar, because it wasn't like what it is now. You're traveling on camel back, Atuka ala kulli dhamirin, min kulli fajjin amik, coming from every deep, deep mountainous route they're coming in, right? And they're coming on a camel that is already very weak and pale because of the strenuous, lengthy journey, right? So the camel went off, so what will happen to the rider? Can you imagine? So what difficulties he goes through? All right. So that was the mujahada for that period. And the mujahada for this period now is to look after your gaze. There was a mujahada then as well. And there's a mujahada now. There was an effort then and there's an effort now. There was an exertion, physical exertion then, and there's an exertion now. That exertion was different, and this exertion is sort of in conformity with this age. People don't have that physical energy nowadays. They say, all right, this is your mujahada, that you're not going to look. Like the Bani Israel, they had also to go through an exertion. What was the exertion? That the fish is going to come on Saturday. يَوْمَ سَبْتِهِمْ شُرَّعًا وَيَوْمَ لَا يَسْبِتُونَ لَا تَأْتِهِمْ. That on that Saturday they were to come right at the surface of the water. Now it's a people that are impassionate about fishing. And it's coming, it's surfacing on a Saturday, coming openly. You come grab, pickers, grabbers, right? And other days it's not coming at all. Now can you imagine the resistance? It will grow weak, obviously. So Allah Ta'ala planned it in that way, that this is your trial. Your trial, that on a Saturday this thing is going to surface the water. And I don't want you to fish on a Saturday, but it's going to surface the water. So now for this latter part of the Ummah, this is your mujahada, this is your struggle. That they're going to come on, they're going to come in this manner, they're going to come in this outfit, right? So what are you going to do at that time? Now your mujahada is don't look at them, don't talk to them, right? Don't accept any service. Perhaps if you are really hungry, then you can just tell them to just leave it there. Whilst you are looking in the other direction, in the completely opposite direction, and you ask them, just leave it please, and you carry on. That's going to be the one mujahada in this journey that you're not going to be looking. Right? Then, whilst you're going to be coming in, right, at the airport, etc., it's going to be a little bit of a struggle then, in the immigrations, then too is going to be seen how you conduct yourself. Are you becoming impatient? Are you losing yourself? Are you talking ill about them? These people got no brains, they don't know how to run this country. Or you will just say, you know, this is part of my mujahada, it's going through my acceptance. Right? It's going to, the whole exercise was for acceptance. And for the acceptance, you need to go through a struggle, right? So this is part of my struggle towards my acceptance, right? Then again, you are coming into the hotel, for example. Now, at the hotel, you're going to find a situation of mixed gatherings. Men, women just coming in, whether in your room or whether on the floor, in the basement, whether it is at meals time, right? It's going to happen. So what are you going to do with them? Now, you have to plan it in your mind that if I'm going to get into this, then I'll get into a big confusion. I'll get into a problem. So I would rather take my meals and have it in my room. Maybe I don't have that variety, etc. But alhamdulillah, at least I'll be keeping in the spirit of struggle, of mujahada. Though I don't have that variety, but I will be maintaining and conforming to the spirit of the struggle. It's a little bit of struggle that is required. And a struggle, not unnecessarily, a struggle that is needed. One is I'm struggling unnecessarily. There is hot water available, but I'm using the cold water. I don't need to go through that struggle. Right? And when there isn't that hot water, then you are using cold water, then it's a struggle, right? So here again, there's a struggle that is required. And they're going to observe you, how you're going to watch, how you're going to do, what you're going to do at that time. Then you are proceeding to the Haram Sharif to make your tawaf, etc. Then too again, there's going to be a lot type of aunties there. How are you going to correct yourself? How are you going to conduct yourself? One person says he saw, you find some nationalities, and when they come in for Hajj or for Umrah, then they sit in groups, like hundreds of them. One, like this year we saw Turks, right, all wearing green topis. So for identification purposes, perhaps they got that everybody will wear green topis. So they can identify this is a Turk, or this is my Turkish countryman, so I can identify with him. So like they have it for the men, then they have it for the women as well, something to identify. So one person is looking towards the Indonesian woman, and he says, Kaise masoom chahre? What innocent faces. Yeah. Now he doesn't realize that he's committing a wrong, haram he's committing. He's admiring them. Right? How did he know that they were innocent faces? He admired them, and he came to this conclusion. He doesn't know that they're innocent, how they are. He doesn't know about it. Right? So, now, this type of an effort, this type of a struggle, is in keeping with this age. Now, you're in the Haram Sharif, now you're making tawaf. And the tawaf again is going to be seen. One person was making tawaf, and he's constantly reading this dua, A'udhu bika minka. O Allah Ta'ala, I ask you refuge from yourself, in other from your wrath. I ask you refuge against yourself, against your wrath. Right? Someone asked him, this is an ajib dua, people make other duas, but you're making this type of a dua. So what is the need for you making this type of a dua? So he says, you see, whilst I was in the same place making tawaf, and I admired one girl. You get all types of people coming in, right? You're getting all different types. It's not a type that you're accustomed to, then you take more to that which you don't know, isn't it? Because something unique, something strange, right? You see, like in the food, right? It's the same food, but it's just the presentation is different. Right? The woman just do a different presentation. That is samosa, right? So the same samosa, now they're making a rocket, right? Or they're making it a half moon. The ingredients will be about the same, but it's a different presentation. That presentation makes it look more attractive. Right? So it's all about presentation. Now, it's a different presentation, now it becomes more and more attractive. It's pulling you, right? It's stretching you. Now, how are you going to behave at that time? So now that's going to be deciding your acceptance. You came for acceptance, but you'll be focused now. Your mind must be focused. So he says that I was making tawaf and I got attracted. And I got attracted, and then one hand came out from the Kaaba Sharif and slapped me. I lost one eye. Now when I go around here, I'm afraid that my next eye won't go. My other eye won't just go. That you're saying that you are making tawaf for the beloved and the house of the beloved, and your eyes in someone else. Imagine now you say, I love you, but you're looking at some other girl. How will she feel? Won't she feel uncomfortable about this? Won't she feel jealous about it? That you're saying that you like me, but then you're looking at something else. So you're saying that you like Allah Ta'ala, and therefore you're going around his house, but you're looking towards something else. Then how displeased Allah Ta'ala won't become. Then again, now you have to do your shopping. Whether you are here, you are there, you have to do your shopping. How are you going to guard yourself? The best thing is that you don't go into places, bazaars, etc. You don't go unnecessarily. You made your tawaf now, and you don't just sit down, you don't sit near these type of people, women, etc. Sit at a distance. You look at the Kaaba Sharif, look at the Kaaba Sharif from a different level, so that you look at the Kaaba Sharif, but you don't have to see the people that are going around. So you have done what you need to do without looking at the things that may put you into an awkward position. See now. Then again, how do you conduct your time? How do you conduct your time whilst you are there in Hajj or in Umrah? How you will conduct your time? Now, when it's going to be an important occasion, it's something very important that you're going for, then you pre-program your mind that, all right, we are here, It's only with the blessings of Allah Ta'ala that we have come here. Right? So it's an opportunity of a lifetime. I don't know I'll get this opportunity again. So when you have appreciated those moments, then you are going to appreciate your time. Because you appreciated those moments. So you're going to program now. Before I go there, I need to program. And if you didn't appreciate this whole safar, say, well, it's a journey now, we're going for a joyride a little bit, make tawaf, go for some shopping, whatever else, and you're just coming back. So that means you didn't have the significance, the importance of the place. If a person has got the significance, the importance of the place, it's not a waste time. You know, you went for a business to China, you went, right, for a business. And you know this, it means much to you. In the small trip to China, maybe a week or 2 weeks, and you can earn so much. So you're going to make all your homework. Before you touch China, you're going to check all your suppliers, what suppliers, where I'm going to get the stuff, which market I must go, and who's the tourist, or who was the guide, and which taxi I must go to, which market I must go, how must I look for the thing, how must I check the prices, etc. I must confirm the deal, how must I confirm the orders, that I'm getting exactly what I have bargained for. So all that homework you're going to do, and then you're going to go to China. Because you have a value for that, what you're going to purchase. You have value for your time, you have value for the commitment that you're making. When you've got that value, then you're going to appreciate your time. But you're just going for a ride now. All right, he's going to China, so he's taking me. So are you going to be concerned? You're not going to be concerned. So the same, when you're going to these places, you've got a concern now. I'm going for a certain purpose. So how must I program my time? Now, when you've programmed your time, then you remain focused on that program. All right, I'm going to sit in this haram sharif. I'll complete one khatam here. I'll go in that haram, I'll complete two khatams. I'll do so much of durood sharif. I'll make so much of tawaf. Or I'll do so much of nafil namaz. Or if I'm in Medina Munawara, then this amount of durood sharif I'm going to read. Right? Then you remain focused on what you are supposed to be doing. Then you don't see now that this person came in the haram sharif and come and talk about granny stories in the Haram Sharif. Where you came from, South Africa. Oh, you got tabligh. Oh, must go tabligh. Yeah? Then start one story after that. Yeah. So, it may outwardly appear that you're giving dawah, but you're going in every other angle. If you are sincere about dawah, then just talk about that, finish. Then don't go the second point and the third point and the seventh, eighth point. Then you lose the track. Just talk to that point. When you go beyond that point, then it's going to go. You're going to go haywire. You're going to lose your whole focus. It's going to be lost. So remain focused. So first, you have to make out a program for yourself, an itinerary for yourself, and after you have made out that itinerary, then remain focused. So what I was getting at is that in the old days also it was a struggle to get to these places, and now also there is a struggle that is required. But just that the nature of the struggle has changed. The nature of the struggle then was different. Allah Pak says, "Al-ana khaffafallahu ankum wa alima anna fikum dhafa." We do realize that there is some weakness within you. So we change the whole nature of the struggle. Now this is the struggle. That you remain focused. You do like this. You program yourself. Now how are you going to program yourself? So you, if it is that you're going with a group or you're going with your family, then how are you going to program yourself? If it's a group, then you can't fight. فَلَا رَفَثَ وَلَا فُسُوكَ وَلَا جِدَالَ. Right? Can't fight. Right? The strange thing is that in this safar, Allah is saying, فَلَا رَفَثَ. First thing, فَلَا رَفَثَ. That no indecent work. No indecent work. Now look in the haram, what you're doing. Look at the shopping areas, what you are doing. Then, when you come across some woman, what you are doing, is this tantamount to rafas or not? Indecency or not? That indecency doesn't only refer to your wife, that you can't be hijabana taluk, that you can't do anything there. But it will also apply to other women. Are you acting in a lewd manner, in an indecent manner? Are you doing something that you're not supposed to be doing? And the nafs plays games with you. The nafs plays, are you seeing, for example, the burqa of the, for example, Turkish woman now? They've got a smart burqa. So you are appeasing your soul by saying that I'm not looking at her, I'm just looking at the something else. So you're looking at the Arab burqa, you say, this is the right burqa. So you're not looking at the, you're appeasing yourself by saying that I'm not looking at the person, I'm looking at the clothing. By all these things will attract you, will cause problem for you. All these things will amount to indecent behavior. You came for a certain purpose, you spend so much of money, went for Umrah or Hajj, you spend so much. Normal person is spending 25,000-30,000 rands. One person is going and coming back, he's spending so much. So now think, why I spend so much, I accumulated this wealth. What's it for? Just going for a ride. I came for a purpose. So the more you remind yourself, the more you remain focused. Okay? So all this can happen if you have had an itinerary for yourself pre-planned, that this is how I'm going to spend my time. Namaz times you've made up in your mind, all right, I need to get my jamaat, I need to get with takbir ula. So if I want that, then I must come to the Haram Sharif at least an hour or hour and a half before the namaz time. Then I can get it. Whereas I'm last minute, I'm rushing into the Haram Sharif and then trying to force myself into the serfs to come into the fun serf. Is that the right thing? Not right. So you're coming in, you're working out in your mind that I need to go for Zohar, I need to go for Asr, or I need to go for a Jummah. When I need to go for the Jummah, then how must I prepare myself? I need to come in first, because there is an additional fazilat for that person that goes with the nominal imam. He's close to the imam. So how must I plan myself? Now all this will be done if you plan yourself, if you consider this as an important thing. You consider the significance, the importance, the ahmiyat of it, then you will do it. You say, well, one of those things, I got the money, I can do things what I want, nobody can tell me what to do. Then you came in empty-handed and you lost whatever you had, you also lost. But you came in with that frame of mind. Now, see, so you will behave differently. And now, this is what is the struggle for this day. So we're talking of this story here, and his wife wanted to see Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and in this state she saw it. So now, everybody else, right, had to go through some mental exertion. Must pull out, must cough out a million to this buzruk, then I'll see it. So it was a strain on him. But now the wife, not going to be any strain if he says, all right, I'll give you 1,000 and you give me back that 1,000. So it's going to be a strain on him, not a strain. If it's not going to be a strain, then how is this going to open up to her? So he planned, he thought of a way that she's going to go through a strain as well. But the only thing that could come to his mind is get her to dress up like this and call her brother. And then the brother will see her, she'll get a shock. Hey, my brother saw me in this type of a state. So the mental strain that she will go through then. And it happened that she fell into that strain, she collapsed. And in that she saw what she was desirous of seeing. This was Mawlana Ghulam Murtaza Sahab. This was one story of his. The other story of his was that he went to take biyat, see, to some Naqshbandi buzurg. So he's discussing within himself. You think that it is the more wise thing for you to take bayat. Now the mind is discussing with him. He said, yeah, it is the wise thing. So the mind is now challenging him. His mind is challenging him. Okay, you know that up till now you were azad, you were free. When you're going to be taking bayat, then you will be in bonds. You'll be in chains. Now don't do this, do this. Don't do this, do this. Do this wazifa, don't do that. Don't look at the wrong, don't hear, listen wrong. Make the wazifa at this time, read this amount of Quran Sharif. Make this type of zikr. Then you need to read Hizbul Azam or Munajat al-Maqbool. Then the Nafil Namazes, Tahajjud Namaz, all that you must read. You know, now you are enjoying a free life, you're enjoying freedom. Now, what's the sense of you tying yourself, putting yourself in shackles and chains? Why don't you just continue enjoying a free life? You're born free, so enjoy your life. So now the discussion is going on with his mind. So he says, yes, I'm putting myself into shackles and chains, but it's not coming without a reward. It's coming with a reward. All right, then what's the reward? Now I know that I can go in this direction when I just reflect over the reward. So the mind is telling him, all right, you know, with all these bonds and these chains, sometimes you have to look after your eyes, sometimes your tongue, sometimes your ears, sometimes your heart, and sometimes your time. So these are about the five things that they insist. Five things that they insist: tongue, the eyes, the ears, the heart, and your time. These are the five things that they insist that you must control it, you must regulate it. The mind doesn't want to be in shackles, it doesn't want to be in chains. Nobody must tell it what to do. It wants to remain free. Now you're going against the current. It wants to be free and you're chaining it. It wants to be free and you're chaining it. You're putting it into bonds. Don't listen to this. Right? That conversation seems to be very, very interesting. But you know within your mind that it's bordering on rebirth. You know, it's bordering on rebirth. Or it's bordering on gossip. Either it's rebirth or either it is gossiping. And you're carrying tales for one person or the other. It sounds interesting because it doesn't refer to you. Or someone that is very dear to you. It doesn't refer to you, to your child, to your wife. So when it doesn't refer to them, then it's all right. Let's see what they have to say about this person, what he did. So doesn't it sound very interesting? See, what happens to us is, we relish with other people's integrities, with the respect and the integrity of others. When that person's integrity is getting smashed, then we are relishing, we are rejoicing. Okay? So, now how are you going to use your ears? You overheard that conversation, and it's just starting off. When it is starting off now, are you going to entertain that or are you going to move away straight? Your mind has to be planned such, okay, when you've made out, okay, this is the direction it's taking, then you move away straight. See? One thought came to my mind some days back, that as you are progressing in deen, right, and more so when you are progressing in deen studies, right, in proportion to the studies that you are progressing, your taqwa must also be progressing. And then you see the life of any of the imams, and in proportion to his ilm, then you saw his righteousness and virtue. Now you hear of a personality as Imam Bukhari rahmatullahi alayh, then the two, three stories that we generally hear about him, right? One is, forget him, even his father didn't have a cent from doubtful sources. Right? Then when he was going through a spell of starvation, no food for 3-4 days, then he could have easily taken a loan just to sustain himself. But he preferred not to take the loan and eat some herbs, you know. Someone used the word grass and someone used the word weed. I said, in our context, they mustn't use the word weeds. Don't use grass and don't use weeds. Because it's a usage, you know. Say he took weeds. How does it sound? The person took weeds. Right. Or he's taking grass. Does it sound right? In our context, it doesn't sound right. Right. So use some other word to convey the same meaning. He preferred taking the herbs from the ground, eating that, and just sustain himself. But what I'm saying to you, for him to take a debt, to take a loan at that time, wasn't it permissible? It was permissible. But you see, now, as he's progressing in ilm, so is he progressing in his righteousness. See, he's progressing in ilm and he's progressing in righteousness. So it was totally permissible for him to take it, but no, I'm not taking it. I'll eat, I'll suffice upon this. I won't even express my need to anybody, let alone expressing my need. I won't take a loan and I will just remain with this. Now, then that ilm gets its gloss, it gets its beauty, it gets its attraction. That ilm And the ailment caught his attention. You know, got a ton of information, but it doesn't have the gloss of righteousness. It doesn't have the brilliance of virtue. You will not show that importance to the person. You will not show the respect to the person. Although one needs to show the respect, but generally people won't show the respect. So that ilm is growing. In proportion to that ilm is this righteousness, this virtue. Now it's complete. It's complete, right? You got an expensive cupboard, but all dirt and filth, all type of dirt, right? Some dung there, and some dirt there, and filth, and whatever else. Is it in keeping with the value of the cupboard? What expensive, most expensive Persian or Turkish cupboard? Very expensive. You know, one musalla space is about 3,000 rand. One musalla space. One person told me now that he bought a Turkish cupboard, one musalla space, for 20,000 rand. So imagine now it's a 20,000 rand carpet, and you put dung there and rubbish and filth and all that. How does it look? So when it's of that value, then you need to be preserving it according to that level. So when you've got the ilm of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, then you need to preserve it also. You have to appreciate it. So you'll be appreciating it how with that type of gloss, with that type of radiance, that type of beauty. So that is one incident that you have Imam Bukhari rahmatullahi, that he will not even take that. Where he could have been implicated, you know, incorrectly, unjustly implicated toward all his money, and he threw it away. Right? Where it could be an implication, a wrong implication, right? No fault of his. There to say, I don't want any doubt to be attributed to me. So that money can go, because that integrity is lost, can't come back. Money is lost, can come back. But the integrity is gone, can it come back? Can't come back. So for the sake of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's words, I will not allow this blemish to come onto my name. Otherwise I can't be a khadim, I can't be a service to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. I want to be a khadim, right? And this is going to be a problem. When this is going to be a problem, then I need to just block it off. See, for the sake of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and for the sake of his hadith, I need to do khidmat for the hadith. Then I need to take this additional strain on myself. This is where we are going off. We don't want to take a strain. No, we want to, everything must just go smooth for me. I don't want to take any strain upon myself. Then again, you look at Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullahi, told you two short stories, right? And the third thing you hear of Imam Bukhari Rahmatullahi, that he says, from the day that I knew that ghibat was haram, I never get myself engaged in ghibat. Now this type of story we only hear at the Bukhari Khatam, or this is a standard thing. I think three-quarters of the people already by-hearted the thing also. Right? So this is Bukhari Khatam, this is what's going to come. Right? But then, do we apply these things? Do we look at it from a different perspective? That this is what Imam Bukhari, Allah Ta'ala, if he elevated him and exalted him, then there must have been some reasons for Allah Ta'ala exalting him to that level. Qasim Nanotwi Rahmatullahi, founder of Darulum Dioban, he used to say, that teen kitabe al-bili hai. There are three kitabs that people can't do justice to them. The more you will write, the more you will speak about it, and the more volumes of knowledge will just come out, will gush out. The more you will write, the more you will speak, and the volumes of knowledge will just gush out of you. One is the Quran Sharif. See, the people writing tafsir, they're writing, as they're writing, and they're progressing, and volumes were just coming out. You looked at it now, you looked at the Quran Sharif Tarjuma, and you looked at the Tafsir now. You looked at it for the second time, again some other volumes are coming out. Anybody that's teaching Tarjuma or Jalalain, right? Then you'll see, first time you were Mutala, something else came out. Second Mutala, and something else came out. So, this three kitab as such, it just comes out, it just flows. Now, that all Quran Sharif is the Quran Sharif, then Bukhari Sharif. Then what made it so acceptable is the acceptability of this person, what he was doing. Okay. You know, you want something to continue, right? One is, you started off, right? One madrasa you started. Some dini work, or you did some, wrote some kitab, right? It went. Few people read it, few people didn't read it. But you want that thing to continue. If you want that deen work to continue, then add the life to it. you add the life to it, then it will continue. Right? You add the life to it, and the life to it is أَوَمَنْ كَانَ مَيْتًا فَأَحْيَيْنَاهُ. Islam is alive, to bring about true deen in you. When you brought about true deen, then that's living. And when it's living, then it moves itself. Then you don't have to advertise it so much. Then it will move, it will carry on. Like you see, Tabligh Jamaat, right? 1930, Muhammad Ilyas Sahib, he started the work, and he passed away in 1940 somewhere. It was about 12, 13 years he got to do this work. But he infused the life into it. Right? So we cannot say that Maulana is dead. He's alive in his work. The actual thing was the work, isn't it? The actual thing was what? Was the body or the work? The body was important, but more than the body was the work. So when the work is alive, then he's alive. As though, you know, figuratively or metaphorically, when the work is alive, then as though he's alive. Understand? So what type of dynamic sincerity must have had? Righteousness, virtue, tahajjud, crying to Allah Ta'ala. What a dynamic person he must have been. That 70 years or 80 years after he's passed on, the thing is still carrying on. See the crying, the tahajjud, the namaz, begging Allah Ta'ala. Right, remaining the right company like I was explaining yesterday. All these things are put together, added together, enlivened the work. When he enlivened the work, now he must be dead and gone. But that work is carrying on. As though he's, you know, that when we were children, we read that book, "For men may come and men may go, and I go on forever." So a brook or something, brook was like a river, you know. So that river is talking of itself. Men may come and men may go, because now everybody drinks from that river. So some people came and went, some people came and went. They came and they went, but I will go on forever. So the same is with this type of personality's work. Then you look at the works of Darul Deoband, right? So he saw that he was on the roof of the Kaaba Sharif and the streams are coming in at his feet and they're going. So they told him the explanation of the dream that inshallah your works will flow throughout the world. Some type of explanation they gave him that your works will flow out throughout the world. And then you see that his works flow throughout the world. And literally, you won't be exaggerating if you say that over a million madrasas, maktabs, etc. have come in internationally throughout the globe just through this one madrasa. It's one place and so many things flew. So it must be some type of very, very pure sincerity. Pure heart, clean heart, good ways, good mannerisms, good character, crying to Allah Ta'ala. Now all these things added up, then it gave that type of acceptance. When it gave that acceptance, the man is gone. And he's passed on over 100 years. Because he passed away 1296. Now add how many years? 1296, over 140 years. Over 140 years, but still the thing is going. Still going, India, Pakistan. You talk of a madrasa in America, Japan, China, anywhere. Somewhere, directly, indirectly, they're related to the same madrasa. But now that is the dynamic sincerity of the person. When he enlivened the world, when he enlivened his work, Allah Ta'ala enlivened his work. When he enlivened himself, Allah Ta'ala enlivened his work. So when he enlivened the work, then he's living, it's perpetual. And even more dynamic is the four imams, right? That they passed on over 1300 years, all of them. 1300 years. But in every madrasa, I think every day you'll hear this imam said this, and this imam said this. And this is his proof, and this is his reason. Don't you hear it? So they passed on, they gave themselves to Allah Ta'ala complete. And Allah Ta'ala then took care of them and their works after they have gone. Imam Bukhari, rahmatullahi, same again. So you see what Imam Bukhari was saying? That ever since I discovered that ghibat was haram, he must have discovered that when he was about 19 years of age, because they say about him that he mastered the hadith in his own town when there wasn't a single hair on his face. But I suppose sometimes my mind works a little bit more than it's supposed to be working. People from Bukhara and all these places here, they get their hair a little bit long later. I don't know if you've seen these people from Bukhara. So they get their hair coming up So, all right, say it was 12, 13 years, at the age of 13. Right? Even then, it's like a miracle. It's a miracle. He says, from that day till now, I never associated in any ghibat. I say, really, it's a genuine miracle. People want to hear of other miracles, right? They want to hear of a miracle. But this is a greater miracle. 1009 became 2008, great miracle. Hamare karamat to bas paise ke saath hote hain. Ek dukaan thi to 10 dukaan ho gayi. To kya karamat? Ek kadam usne rakha ho. Ek lakh se 10 lakh ho gaye. So our miracles only work with money. Now this is a real miracle. At the age of 13, say for example, right? From that day right till the man passed away. So this ilm, you know, one is ilm at a primary level that everybody, every Muslim has to be taking. Or at a secondary level, also you need some people. But at a tertiary level, right, that type of ilm that you're taking at a tertiary level, coming a Maulana, coming a Qari Sahib, or a Mufti Sahib, or a Muhaddis, whatever, then that requires a lot of taqwa, a lot of righteousness. Righteousness must be not at the normal, it must be above the normal. Now, I just counted about four things just randomly about Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullahi. And if you go dig deeper, then you find even more in him. We're just talking about the things that are popular about him. Then you look at the Imams, four Imams. Every Imam, he was outstanding, he was a star. If you talk about his ilm, he was a star. If you talk about the righteousness, he was a star again. In taqwa, in righteousness, we have Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmat, this is an example. That the day he heard that in the town Kufa, one goat went missing. Then he went and found out, you know what? A goat, maximum, what is its life, lifespan? So they told him 12 years, 13 years approximately. So for that 12, 13 years, he left out eating goat's meat. Because, see, I may be buying this from this person here, from this stock owner, and my purchasing, my buying and selling will be absolutely permissible. But it's possible also that that goat that went missing, it went into that flock, got mixed up. The owner doesn't know that that thing ran away from here, it got mixed up onto that flock, and then this thing is coming onto my dastarkhan, onto my table. How must I know? So the easier thing is not to eat. So was it now compulsory for him not to eat it? This was the taqwa, this was the righteousness. So when the righteousness had excelled, then as though that was the catalyst to bring that life into that. Now this is where we go off. So we think now that righteousness is just to pull a couple of tasbihs, read a couple of nafil namazes. Now this righteousness is this is that. That is why Abu Zughanuddin say that even a little bit of tasbih, zikr, etc., but a very, very high level of taqwa and righteousness. What you're supposed to be doing at that time. Not what I desire to do. I desire to do it. Hazrat Ahmed, you say the same thing. Deen, shok pura karne ka naam nahi hai. It's not just fulfilling your aspirations. That's not deen. But what Allah Pak wants for you from that time, from at that time, what He wants from you. Your mother is ailing. He got a shok to read tahajjud namaz. At that time, deen wants you to look after your ailing mother. Hey, now I'll miss out my tahajjud. The fazilat of the tahajjud, it'll go away. But what Allah Pak wants at that time? So, no one has deen sikha nahi, na samjha hai, na sikha hai. But ek shok pura karna hai. They want to fill that shok of this. So now, when Allah Pak has brought you to the tertiary level, not primary, not secondary, now at tertiary level, higher education, and he's engaging you in dini work, right? When he's engaging you in dini work, then the righteousness must be sparked, must be also shining out. The righteousness, the level of the righteousness, must also be coming up at that level. Coming up. Now that fits in. You know, when I say that musalla, that person told me he bought the Turkish musalla 20,000 men. Now you look after it, you put it onto the wall or something. Now you say you appreciate that, you're looking after it, you're respecting it. But you're putting dung there, pouring tea on side, same way, same place, dirt, filth, etc. So, but you don't know the value of this thing. Won't you say that you don't know the value, you didn't understand it? So the person who's got that knowledge of nubuwwat, like one is a person reciting the Quran, and one is becoming a hafiz, then he's got at a secondary level, and a qari sahib at a tertiary level. So the hafiz sahib must be greater than the normal person in all his aspects. The way he views life, the way he conducts himself, the choice of his words. Even the choice of his words, he can't using any type of words. He's a different person now. Allah Pak has blessed him. So he must recognize the blessing that Allah Ta'ala has favored him with. He has to behave in that. What will be the choice of his words? Inshallah, we'll complete the story some other time.